Hello, this is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
And the first snows of winter have already fallen upon High Wycombe.
Didn't last very long.
Yeah, but it bodes. That's boding. That's proper boding, that is.
The cat looked at me.
Is this a thing to be remarked upon? Does she avert her gaze from your awesomeness?
In the sense of, I pay good money for this service. What are you doing, you ignorant monkey? Yes, yeah, I've worked on tech support for humans.
Yeah, but they yeah, never mind. We have two topics this week. One, a particular game, Brindlewood Bay, which I finally experienced. And the other, a general topic on the future of role-playing. You heard it here first. But first, Roger.
Well, I would just like to thank Robert Wolfe, who dropped some money in our tip jar. This does encourage us to keep the show going. Thank you very much.
We do appreciate it. And we do spend it upon games, mostly.
Well, that's because most of what we spend goes on games, be fair.
That's true. Next. We still enjoy the generosity of the Bundle of Holding, which gives us advance notice of their various projects, not very much advance notice, and a look at what they're touting. And this month, Roger has found something that he wishes to tell us all about. Roger?
And I think the usual disclaimer is important because, as we always say, we get these free of charge. And so I found this thing, which I think is really interesting, and I want to play with it some more. But I haven't paid for it, so maybe... what I'm suggesting here is not go out and buy this, though I will point out the bundle expires today, so you don't have much time to think about it. I'm suggesting take a look at it and see if it seems interesting and suitable for what you want to do. This is Outgunned.
Yeah.
Which is an Italian RPG from a few years ago. It is a cinematic pulp game.
Okay.
It is tied to a specific genre or setting of cinematic pulp, but that is the approach they're taking. And, okay, I am shallow. If you've listened to Ribbon of Dreams, you will find that quite often my feeling about a film can be rendered positive or negative by an early exposure, an early thing in it. And then that just stays in even as other things change later. I'm still positively disposed towards it because they got that bit right at the start. And one thing that is usually a bad thing for me, as I was skimming through this, it's a dice pool system. We may talk at length in future about dice pool systems, but there will be equations involved.
Oh, God.
What's more, it's a fiddly dice pool system because what you care about is not what you actually roll in terms of getting sixes or whatever, but with how many matches you get. So four ones out of your five dice roll is just as good as four sixes out of your five dice roll.
Is this as complicated as One Roll Engine?
No.
All right, well...
It is only trying to give you one dimension of success.
Okay.
So I was thinking, yeah, I don't really feel super happy about that, but ooh, hello. They give a table with the probabilities. Thank you.
This is the one thing they got right and inspired you all the rest of the way?
Yeah, because you may recall a while ago now, a year or so, Matt, maybe, perhaps, I played They Came From Beneath the Sea with Watson Hall.
Yeah.
And that uses a dice pool system. It basically is derived from early edition World of Darkness with some light modification to take out the most horrible bits of it. But what that does is essentially you roll a number of dice based on how good you are and you have to get X or more to succeed.
That's the bog standard common dice pool mechanic.
And the GM for this, our friend Nick, was feeling, frankly, a bit lost because the book may well say, you know, an average character has a skill of 3 and a target number of whatever is a hard task, but it doesn't give any actual feeling beyond that. It doesn't give any numbers. It just says, oh, this is hard. And so what I ended up doing was building a probability table so that he could say, okay, you know, here is my average character who's okay at this, but it's not the primary thing they do. They are going to have a 70% chance of doing this at this difficulty level. And he found, and it's a thing that I find as well, that it's much easier if you have that actual number to say, okay, this is how hard that is. Therefore, you know, this is the sort of difficulty level I should set when I'm designing the adventure and deciding what should be.
At which point I think, why aren't we doing this in RuneQuest?
Well, yes. That is a consideration. To be fair to Outgunned, it also has some various fiddles. You have this fairly unforgiving system to start with, which will often end up dumping you with a failure, but then you can re-roll in various conditions. And basically, the more you get into the action film genre, the more re-rolls you get and the more chances you get to do something embracing, even though you didn't really have the skills for it. And that I rather like.
Well, yes, okay.
So there's that. And there's a fair bit of stuff. There are lots of ways basically to say, oh yeah, I messed up, but I want to have another try because I'm just so awesome.
that's a feeling my players often have.
It's pretty lightweight. It's pretty action focused. There is a standard thing of if you have a task that is tagged dangerous, which is not a difficulty level but a level of hazard, then the worse you fail it by, the more grit you take, which is not hit points, though it works a bit like hit points. It is the number of times that your awesomeness has saved you from being knocked out, caught by the cops, whatever.
Yeah. Does your grit have a limit?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the same for everybody. 12 boxes. And you can take 8 at a go if you fail at something sufficiently difficult and hazardous. So.
Okay.
But yeah, lightweight game. I haven't played it yet. I want to play this at some point. I want to run it at some point. Worst case, I can steal the scenarios for Modern Age.
Yeah.
But this feels a lot lighter than Modern Age, and I am, as I've said before, looking in an ongoing sense for a lightweight, fast-moving this sort of game. There are lots of others out there. Quite a few of them I haven't really ended up liking much once I've played them. Maybe this will go that way as well, but so far it looks interesting. So, the basic offer, which is the fixed price bit, because this is the usual bundle of holding, escalating price thing, comes with Action Flicks 1 and 2, each of which is essentially 10 mini-genre books.
Ooh.
And this is the point where it being an Italian game is relevant, because I remember, you may well remember too, the Italian film industry of the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Yeah, they had a very unique flavour to them, which I've never bothered to pick up.
But they were also very good at saying, "Ooh, that Hollywood film has been popular. We will turn out 6 million rip-offs of it."
Ah!
Possibly before the Hollywood film has even got out of mainstream cinemas. And yeah. I definitely got that feeling here. These are not subtle homages to their inspirations. There is one called Star Raiders, which includes, as an example PC, Babby Yod.
What?
Who is a small green character with big ears and great big eyes.
Oh, right.
And you've got, you know, you've got that, you've got your Conan the Barbarian rip-offs, you've got all sorts of stuff. Each of which, these are not really intended to be a multiversal setting or anything like that. The idea is you will have characters who exist in a particular setting. And character generation is pretty quick, so That could work quite well. This is something I would definitely consider using for my long-standing hypothetical Mission Impossible game, for example.
All right.
In which one of the elements of that is the point at which either the GM says or a PC who's bored with their regular character says, you know, I bet this mission could use a trapeze artist.
Well, yeah, if you want to do... If you want to do the classical Mission Impossible, then only one character from adventure to adventure is stable, and he picks up the...
Well, you have the series regulars,
yeah,
who just happen to get chosen each time, and sometimes a guest star and sometimes not. But anyway, that is for a future ever and anon. What else is in here? The extended offer has two larger genre books. One of which is World of Killers, which is basically your John Wick, Assassin's Creed. Everybody significant in the world is a superpowered assassin of some sort.
I think it must get really bad lining up at the coffee shop in the morning in that sort of universe.
Mm. There is also Adventure, which is your 20s pulp adventure style. Mm. The font is even borrowed from Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. And each of these has a campaign in it. They call the individual adventures shots. There is the one, for example, in the core book is one shot, but about three scenes. It's fairly straightforward and linear. Some of them have more scope for investigation, but the campaigns have three or four shots each. Also, I've picked up, or at least seen outside the offer, there is a superhero genre book, which is frankly less interesting to me, but maybe relevant for people who want to do that sort of thing. So, I'm interested.
Well, good. I was going to ask a pretentious question about how Italian the feel of it is, but I think you've answered that, and I've only ever seen the horror movies, which shows how limited my cinematic interests are.
They did a lot of barbarian... they did classical Greek rip-offs when those were a thing in the 60s. Mm. They did barbarian rip-offs in the 80s.
What are they ripping off now, I wonder?
I've no idea. But, yeah, I should say I have no experience whatsoever of Italian role-playing games, at least not knowingly.
This is the first one you've fallen across.
Yeah, and it certainly looks interesting. So again, this offer ends today, 1st of December, but it may well be worth a look.
Okay, onwards.
There's a game that's been getting a bit of interest and talked about recently, and that is Brindlewood Bay, which is, well, it's presented as a mystery game, but it's sort of not. And Mike has had a chance to play this.
Yes, this is during the interval between my last game ending and me getting the next one ready. I have been able to plague my Wednesday night group with experimental sessions of things I'm not planning to run forever. Brindlewood Bay is on two levels. It's a simulator of little old ladies solving mysteries, which is a very cosy, as they say, genre. There's even a lot of mechanics here which are labelled cosy. But this is a group of little old ladies in their murder mystery book club being asked by the local police, who are either incompetent or corrupted, to go out and solve mysteries around the place.
As I picture it, look, you're gonna be getting it involved anyway.
Yes.
Can you at least get involved on the books so that we can keep vague track of you?
We don't want you to be deniable this time. And this they do. And I'll explain the big mechanic of it in a moment. And in the background, there is lurking and building up slowly the hints of something monstrous amongst the townsfolk, something strange and hideous, a conspiracy to do something to do with the sea and something to do with the ancient Greek gods, which is going to be filled in later, but is going to lurk a lot. And the idea is that that the characters have two separate saving mechanisms, which are of limited use. One of which is based around their love of a particular series of female detective stories. And one of which is based around them opening their minds to the greater horrors of the cosmos. Both, if you run out of them, will cause the character to become retired or go out to live in a farm upstate or something. But so that is a limited span thing capable of saving your character.
You don't recover these then?
Yeah, I think some of the mundane-based ones you can refresh, but not all of them. And the horrific ones, I'm afraid, leave an indelible mark upon your personality.
Once you've seen what is beneath the streets, how can you walk along casually to the corner coffee shop? I mean, you know what's there.
Yes, don't go down the fish market ever again. The central mechanic of this is that there is no solution, not at the start. The characters are going out gathering clues, and when they successfully gather a clue somewhere, the GM has a list of pre-made clues, which they are going to somehow work into the thing that the little old ladies are investigating. Sometimes they get away clean with it. Sometimes they get more complications and have to run for it. Two of the ones that I remember including in the session I did were a carpet stained with blood and a bundle of receipts for expensive presents. And they were looking along the beach for the place where the body was found, and found the first one. And they were looking at the body itself and found the second in his back pockets. And when they've gathered enough information, they get to sit down and discuss what's happening and try to include as many as possible of the clues. A minimum, each scenario has a difficulty, or the difficulties are minus to the dice roll that's just coming up, and the number of clues included is a plus. And they then roll. If they fail, they've not only not got the right person, they've not got it in a disastrous fashion which causes them some inconvenience. If they succeed totally, they've got the right person, and they say, "It's a fair cop, Gov. I'll come along quietly," or the American equivalent. And if they succeed in the middle, then they succeed, but with a complication. There's something they haven't taken into account. And my feelings about this are all a bit tangled up with me being a very long-term GM for this bunch of people. And for the other bunches of people as well, and finding it difficult to keep myself in the background. Now, the game itself is ambiguous about how much the GM should thrust his own ideas in. I can't help but feel that I went to the toilet in the middle as we're getting to the climax of the investigation. I sat myself down and I started thinking about it, which maybe had been a mistake, because by the time I got up and went back to the rest of the group, I had formed my own fully formed hypothesis of, oh yes, that's what must be coming up, and the and that's what must have happened from this pile of clues, and they didn't quite get to what I had envisaged. But fortunately for me, they had a middling dice roll, so I could insert the fact that there were two people doing it, and they were, and it was actually the other one who actually did the foul deed. It was the butler did it, but he only did it because he was in love with his mistress. All right, so I stuck that in, and I can't tell whether I need to feel guilty about that, whether I am harshing their vibe. I don't think some of them noticed. I noticed, and therefore I'm feeling unhappy about the death of the GM, or at least his retirement from full-time play.
I must admit I'm a little surprised that this game has a GM. I should say, for non-regular listeners, if any, I am quite a fan of mystery stories.
Uh-huh.
And I quite like investigative / mystery scenarios, but the approach I take, and you know, being fair to the game, it doesn't claim to be doing this at all. It's explicitly doing something different. But what I generally like is to set up a puzzle. Mm-hmm. The player characters, via their skills and abilities and so on, can gather information, but fundamentally it really comes down to the players putting in a certain amount of brain power to work out what it all means.
Yeah.
I have seen systems which say, you know, make an investigation roll or a deduction roll or whatever, add the points of clues that you have versus the difficulty, and then if you have it high enough, then you get the solution. And that may be technically more using the character's abilities, but to me that takes away some of the fun of it.
Yeah.
And I think... I'm just slightly surprised, given what you've said, that there even is a GM slot for this game. There are certainly games that don't have them.
The GM is there to choose between the long list of clues. I think they found 7 clues. I think there was another 6 or so on the list of possible clues that could be thrown in if I thought they would be better suited to one place or another. I think you could probably reduce the clue list to a deck of cards, and require the players collectively to get it all together. But the GM is playing the NPCs. Everybody's a suspect who isn't a player character, obviously.
Hmm.
There ought to be a way to work it around so that one of the characters can end up a suspect, which Nero Wolfe did once by killing off one of his gaggle of investigators when they discovered that he was the one who was guilty and decided to dispense justice for themselves. I liked that moment. I did.
There's a thing that I think far too few cop shows do, which is when somebody asks, am I a suspect? They say, yes, of course you're a suspect. The entire world is a suspect. I'm not sure I'm not a suspect. We're trying to narrow it down. That's why we're asking you all these questions.
I think you are until you finish answering these questions, and maybe even then. On the whole, I like the game, but I am having problems with the exit of the GM, and I've had problems with this in the past. My players have berated me for not giving them what the description of the game says it should have, which is co-creation. I'm probably going to have to, because I haven't finished writing the character generation for the outline for the next thing, I'm probably going to be playing it again tomorrow, and I'll see how it goes then. But I am finding it hard to follow the ideal of not being a director, not being the author, but just being a slightly specialized player. And it may be that my aged brain is resistant to any such thing. Maybe my aged brain is not capable of taking on any more role-playing game mechanics. I probably should never read another book again, but...
I'm just thinking of a thing that comes up in some mysteries, which I have christened the single sin principle, which is that somebody is being cagey about, you know, why his alibi doesn't check out or whatever. And once you have discovered that this is because he was sneaking out to see his girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
You diegetically, obviously, you can, yeah, in the world of the investigation, you can't then completely dismiss him. But as a reader, you can say, "Aha, that is his single sin, having the affair."
Yeah.
Therefore, he is not the murderer.
Yeah, there is a thing in TV mysteries in which the principle of the of that actor's too good for that part, he must be the murderer.
Yep. Here's a guest star I've heard of.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, you want your best, possibly eldest actor to be the one to actually get to choose scenery. And rant about their motivations. The BBC could afford multiple ones of these for their Miss Marple adaptations, but most TV companies have a budget, you know.
And certainly, remembering watching the CSI series, there were long running shows. They were doing 20 plus episodes a year. They wanted new people all the time. There are obviously a lot of aspiring actors and an awful lot of people who have gone on to success. Obviously, even more people who haven't have their first role in a show like this. So generally, if there is one person I've even heard of at all, that's the significant one this episode.
Okay, getting back to the point where
what I was going to say was the single sin could be used as a way of explaining away clues that appear to point to the wrong person. If you have an idea of if this person is not the murderer, then here is their other thing.
I think that's that any red herrings are decided to be red herrings post the dice roll, because you are supposed to accept the player's hypothesis, their scheme, their explanation for everything they've got. If the dice say it's good, then it's good, no matter how stupid it is. And therefore you have to make that work.
That seems a little bit of a shame, not because of that, but because the other way around. If they have an utterly beautiful explanation, but then roll badly.
Yes.
Do you remember several years ago now at Thirsty Meeples, we played a board game called London Dread, I think, and you were going around the board investigating mysterious goings on in Victorian London, and when you resolved them, you got, I can't remember what they were called, some sort of clue points, and at the end, which you could bring on at any point, or when the timer ran out on your number of moves, you made a die roll adding your clue points. And at that point, you just win or lose the game by this one die roll. And that was frankly frustrating.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Westminster Mystery or something like that.
Whitechapel Mystery? Whitehall Mystery. The hidden movement game.
Yeah.
The same people who did Letters from Whitechapel, and it is essentially the same game but designed for a smaller player count.
All right. Well, be this as it may, I think the thing is, if you have a pre-set up mystery, something written by the GM, then what you want at the end is, "Oh, of course, how foolish of us not to see it." And not, "Well, how the hell were we supposed to tell that?" Which is something I get all too often, I'm afraid. I like this.
Read Gomes Mysteries again. Upload it into your brain.
I haven't got that much space left, as I indicated earlier. I would say I like this, but I'm not sure it's a good psychological fit for me or any aged, used to his own way GM. I think being entirely... Let me bring in Isaac Newton here. Hypotheses non fingo is one of his sayings. I do not make hypotheses, but we all do. We all set out with an idea of what we're going to find. Sometimes we are shocked to discover we're wrong. Sometimes we overlook what's actually going on because we think what we've found proves what we thought in the first place. But we all set out with a mission plan in mind. And
yeah, this is a huge game in real world police work. Because you've got two or three possibilities. One of them looks likely, and we know this guy. He's done that stuff before. Mm. And so, without even any conscious bias involved, they will look harder at that person, and they will find things that point to that person because he's a bit dodgy. And
because he's a human being. Well, that's why.
Everybody is a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Present company not excepted. But there will be enough by the fairly low standards of criminal proceedings, possibly to get that bloke banged up, even if he didn't do it, simply because he's done that sort of thing before. He's the sort of person who might have done it, and you can't actually prove anything. And I think you were saying that this is a game which wants you to hypothesise ahead of your data.
No, I'm saying it wants you to. It wants the GM to have an absolutely neutral reaction to anything that the players has come up with. Now you're going to, when you weave the clues into the story as it's presented, because the players go to a place, they find a clue, you find a clue which you think you can shoehorn in. By doing that, you are introducing things which will suggest themselves to the players. Even if you didn't intend it to suggest anything, their little minds will start galloping ahead and saying, hang on, didn't he say back then, what you said back then didn't mean anything.
And this is the thing I was trying to reach for, that it's encouraging the players to build structures ahead of the data.
Yeah, it is.
And when they feel confident enough to commit that structure and say, this is real.
Yes, that is the whole idea. Now they're going to start taking dinges and loss of and disadvantages as they go through. So by some point, they are going to be fed up with this and decide we've got enough. We're going to go ahead. The argument, the discussion amongst the little old ladies was fairly spirited, as I recall it, and fairly detailed. They did go off down a few lines, and I was trying to keep my face pokered and not groan visibly when they went off down lines which I thought were stupid. but that is the difficulty. There is a degree of there's a degree of being uncommitted to any particular explanation, which is quite hard. When I started doing the Dracula dossier, I didn't know everything about my setting, but I had managed to eliminate some suggestions that were put forward and put in a few ideas which were marked, I'll work these in if I get the chance. But I still knew it was about vampires. I still knew they were going to kill Dracula at the end, or try to. So here there is a dedication to agnosticism, which even I, as a lifelong agnostic, I'm finding difficult to sustain. So I'm going to give it another try. I think it might be more fun for other people than it is for me. There is a jokey overlay of echoes of 1980s and 1990s American TV cop shows. And there's an overlay of Cthulhoid cosmic horror stuff. lurking in the background, which we haven't. Mysterious sights of people doing improvised prayer meetings on the beach and strange dreams is all they've got so far, but it's going to grow.
When I've skimmed through this, I was getting the impression that the Cthulhoid tentacular side of things might be that one element too much, but maybe not, and people are clearly enjoying it. So,
well, it shouldn't be there too much too early on. You should be able to look at Brindlewood Bay, a lovely tourist and retirement community on the American northeast coast, and just see the cozy bits, and the little old ladies who knit and make quilts and put things in their scrapbooks,
and make cakes for the little sisters of Shub-Niggurath Bake Sale.
Oh dear, I think there's going to be a secret society amongst the upper class. I can see it coming even now. But I think it's fun, but I think it's hard on the brains of aged persons, is what I think. Not as hard as some of the stuff I've done. I tried doing Mouse Ritter with my other group, and I think I did not understand it. Because in one, the mice breezingly went right through. The first time I ran it, the mice went breezingly right past the rats and killed them while they were drunk. Hey. And then the other one, there was first a total party kill, and then the replacements decided they weren't going to try and take out those rats. Not at all. No, not at all. And so, on the whole, I haven't got Mouse Ritter. Never mind. Hey. Christmas is coming up, and I had the privilege this year, I will have the privilege, of giving my great-nephew, I am so old, my great-nephew Remy, his first game. He's rising too, so this is a simple and colourful farmyard-themed game, which his mother liked the look of. And also, in the recent bundle of holding, there was the offer of the Magical Land of Yeld, which is a...
I think this is technically still open as this comes out.
All right, well, you may take this as a sort of recommendation based on me not having read it terribly far. It's an interesting child-intended role-playing game about a group of children who go through a magical door to a distant kingdom. But their isekaiing hobby turns nasty when they come back after one adventure and discover that the door back is locked, and they must go on a quest to find it. They must take up the role of heroes of this magical land, go and quest for the keys to the door, and risk the fact that if they take too long about it, they will turn into monsters themselves. Don't ask me how that's done. That's part of the bit I have not yet got to. And this is lovely. It has even has the dark theme that I have always thought about using in the in writing an isekai-themed thing myself, that the gods that they find themselves serving on the other side are not as beneficent as Aslan is depicted as, but something more ambiguous. And to find it in something that's clearly intended for children is both a surprise and, I hope, when I continue reading, a pleasure. But it is very heavily children-themed. It's clearly intended from the way the mechanics are put together for children to be playing with these children. And it started me thinking about two questions. The first is, what is a good, probably first role-playing game for children? And the second is something like Yeld, in which you play children, actually what children want to play? Do children want to play as children, or do they want to be a child's version of an adult?
Certainly, when I was a child, which I more or less remember-ish, yeah. I was in the latter camp. I was not interested in reading about books about children like me, or even books about children at all. I was interested in reading about books about people who did things.
Well, I loved the Narnia books from an early age. So, special enough, children were of interest yeah. to me. I mean, in the comic books, I remember the heroes were adults. They were usually soldiers in the Second World War, because we were still in that time period then when everything was about the war. And Captain Hurricane of the Royal Marines, was that his name?
That's outside my noosphere.
was one of the people I imagined myself being. But adults definitely like imagining being children. There are games that are set
sometimes. Back in the 90s, I was at the Gen Con in the US. It was still in Milwaukee in those days. When Mike Pondsmith was proudly announcing the launch of Cyber Generation. This was the sort of follow-on to Cyberpunk, in which you are playing children who have been infected by a plague and got nanotech-related magic powers. They don't call them magic powers, but that's basically how they work, because he had swallowed Eric Drexler whole. And he was going on about, you know, children feel everything more intensely, and you can have all these, you know, every little slight is the most important thing ever. And I have never seen a room react so dead.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it takes me living in a dystopian near future to being an annoying little brat with superpowers in a dystopian near future, and that is not. I don't know. There is a certain pleasure to playing somebody. For an adult, there is a certain pleasure to playing somebody to going back to early adolescence or even late childhood.
I'll take your word for it. I mean, I have looked at a few minutes of Stranger Things, and that had no appeal to me either. So, you know,
I looked at it and I thought, I really must watch the rest of this sometime. I still haven't. All right, so that I'm saying that there may be a mismarketing approach to children, in as much as there is sometimes a mismarketing approach to adults on this issue. I think that there is definitely a market here. But I have the feeling that the marketeers are selling to the parents more than they are selling to the children.
Well, it's certainly traditional for children's books. I mean, very few children buy their own books. So.
Oh, and they encouraged us to do it at my school. There was a thing called, I think, the Scholastic Book Club, which one of the teachers operated the scheme of. Which sold you paperbacks at a discount out of a list. I still have copies of The War of the Worlds and some other books from that period of my childhood, and it got me into the habit of buying books for myself when I had the spare cash, which I didn't very much because I was a kid. I think there is potentially a small market to sell role-playing games to kids who will want to play role-playing games. And I'm not sure. I think the most difficult thing would be to market it to potential young GMs, because I think all of the ones that I've seen assume that it's going to be adult GM'd at least from the start.
I regard this as a very toxic thing. This whole idea about being the GM is really hard, and it's a thankless and unrewarding task. Well, sometimes it is, but being the GM is great fun, and if you don't screw up, it doesn't need to be that hard either. Don't run D&D, which demands a lot of you.
Yeah. I think there would be a... I think you can take really simple systems and use them for deep and interesting stories.
If children haven't yet been bludgeoned out of it, they will work out perfectly good let's pretend on their own.
Yeah, but we want to give them something... we're assuming they have the let's pretend... what I'm saying is, I think you could write something that children would actually choose to play. I'm not sure what it is. I think it shouldn't be totally kid friendly. Oh, that's difficult because they're children have minds that are both tougher than you think and more fragile than you think.
Honestly, the original D&D without the 3 illustrations with nipples would be fine.
I didn't focus on the nipples, all right?
Oh, obviously also remove the random harlot table. But
I remember at a quiz at the convention gaining great praise for the number of entries I could remember in that table. but I think it's all faded now with old age. All right, so I think I'm putting forward this as a difficulty. A good first GMing game and a good first game for people. I think pre-10s is about the youngest you want to throw these at children. If I understand the average developmental stage, my mother would be better at this. She was a primary school teacher, and she had Piaget down cold. But I think there's something to be done here. I'm just not sure that the current wave of games, which I've not looked deeply at, I'm riffing off just these thoughts and the limited amounts of things I've been able to research. Is that there is a market for young people's fairly two-dimensional character generation and having adventures and being able to do things. But I don't know how to design it. I do think that some of what we've got here... There's a game called Hero Kids, which I've seen praised, but it has kids as being special. Which I'm not sure. I think kids want to play their idea of an adult person with a certain amount of supports. And on the other hand, there's kids on bikes and kids on broomsticks. But again, I think that's one which is actually aimed towards adults who want to play kids.
Yeah, I'm just, perhaps it's my anti-capitalist instinct twitching. I want to start with what the kids are doing, what they regard as a shortfall in the let's pretend they're doing already, and patching up that rather than starting from here is a role-playing system which we will make easier.
I don't think yet. Well, yes. Anybody foolish enough to try to do this is going to have to either have experience as a teacher or as a child psychologist and observe from there, or maybe you can get a consultant in, I don't know, and then see. I don't know if there is a way to use this as a cunning cultural brainwashing scheme to get the kids eventually to move on to other more adult games. But ideally, I'd want something that would actually breach the years from childhood to adolescence to awkward young spotty adult. But well, I don't know if that's possible.
I'm just remembering that in a slightly different endeavour, Hubba is a publisher of board games. They specialise in board games for children. And one of the things that they will do is produce a game which, with the same components, will include three or four or five different games more suitable for different developmental stages. So you can play the basic game as a very young child, and then when you get the hang of a particular thing, you can move on to the slightly more advanced game.
Yeah.
Without having to buy a whole new box. Is there a way of doing that in role-playing? I don't know.
I think getting used to the nice physical components, I think you probably want to... I don't think anybody's going to be able to afford to sell actual figures of... And the figures of... Maybe wooden figures to start with, but cardboard is going to be much more economical. The one time
I would argue that the whole figures on a tactical map ties you down to one very specific sort of game, and quite possibly that isn't the sort of game you want to be doing here.
True. The Magical Land of Yeld uses a chessboard as its tactical map. The characters are called Friends, which is just a little too cute. Start at one edge, and the monsters start at the opposite one. And it uses it says the person who speaks up first moves first. That I can see that leading to arguments. And then they pass the move on to somebody. On your own side or on the other side, and I can see a kid moving forward cautiously and then making the monsters move forward. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that working. That's quite ingenious. Now that I think more deeply about it, but anyway, I've yet to finish reading it. The one time I did get to introduce somebody to role-playing games. My friend Rob, who's now passed, had a niece. Does he still have her now he's dead, I wonder? Had a niece, anyway, who had expressed an interest. And I took a very simple system. What's S. John Scott's? Rhesus, that's the one. Did an adventure, a pre-published adventure using that and pre-published characters with my regular Wednesday group to provide the rest of the players, and gave her a thumb drive with that game and a lot of other maybe useful stuff. And I'm told, well, last time I spoke to Rob, which is some time ago now, sadly, she was still involved in role gaming, but that was at adolescent stage, and maybe the whole kids role playing project is too early, or maybe it's not. I don't know.
I think it would. It depends on how flexible it is. I think the earlier you go, the less you should try to force it into a particular pattern. I've seen in a couple of places recently, including the forums, somebody saying, my son, my young relative, my neighbour's young relative, whatever, is interested in role-playing, and they've asked me to help because they want to have some vague idea of what they're doing before they try to do it with their friends, or before they try to get a group together or anything of that sort. So I think there's another scope here, which is overlapping, perhaps, of things that you can do with a small group and perhaps one experienced player, but in order to get somebody on board with what they need to do as a player or as a GM.
Yes, that would be a good deed, a mitzvah for the role-playing community. And when you can do it, you should do it, but... I've sort of managed to convince myself that there is a commercial possibility here, and that it's not currently being served. I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm the wise old sage who states the problem and encourages anybody who's listening to actually stick their oar in the water and see what they can do. But I think, we should encourage this sort of thing. I'm ready to do it again if anybody to do demonstration sessions and explain things to people if anybody approaches me, but I'm not going to do the hard work of creating a commercial proposition here. Mm. I think I've stated my position.
Yeah, well, if I did, I'd probably give it away anyway because I'm like that. I think it's tricky.
Explain to me the tricks, the difficulties.
I think it would be far too easy to say, this is my idea of great role-playing, and therefore this is what role-playing is like and what I will tell you about. And it may be great role-playing for me, but it may not be great role-playing for them. What I don't want to do is take the risk of giving them a role-playing experience which they may enjoy, but essentially they find boring or not suitable for them at the time. And then think, well, if that's what role-playing is, I will go back to my computer games instead.
Well, anything can fail. And you can make a mess of just about anything.
Yeah, but I do see a specific failure mode here of if you give it too much of a specific flavour of this is what I like, then it becomes this is what Great Uncle likes, as opposed to, well, yeah, okay, but what do I do?
I should still be living when Remy gets to the stage of wanting to do role playing games. I really should, but I'm not guaranteeing anything. The difficulty is that most adults, and certainly most gamers that I know, are not terribly well acquainted with children. I should probably ask my friends in my Wednesday night group who have actually raised some. But I
regard children very, very much like cats. I quite like them individually. I do not like them in general.
And you hope...
I'd like to be able to hand them back to somebody when they get boring.
Yeah, if they're under one, make sure they sterilise them first. I've got very nasty infections from cuddling babies. Onward. If you have done the kindly work of introducing children to role-playing games, do let us know about it. You can contact us via...
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekeli.li.
And we'll be back again in the new year.